Welcome to the LeanZone.com podcast, where we discuss construction contracts, liens, and bonds. And now, our host, Alex Barthet.
My name is Alex Barthet. I'm a construction lawyer. So we'll go ahead and start with your construction contracting. The first thing you need to understand is that is really the basis of your relationship with both the person that hires you and the people that you hire. So it's really important that you understand what that rule book is and what it says. And that typically comes into two arenas, right? One would be the negotiation of the agreement at the beginning, but then once that agreement is in place, however it's been negotiated and whatever the terms are, is how are you going to implement that on the job? Because that's the rule book. So when there's an issue, instead of winging it, you need to find that document, you know, dust it off, and see what the agreement says so that you can play by the rules so that if something doesn't go well, you can support your position because you can always point back to that contract. So the first question that I get a lot is, does my contract or subcontract need to be in writing in order to be enforceable? So almost always your agreement with the people that hire you is going to be in writing. But sometimes you may hire folks and there may not be a writing that supports it. Ideally, you should have an agreement in place with the people that you hire, vendors, subcontractors, rental companies. That just makes it easier for you to know what the rules are. But just know that just because someone, you pick up the phone, you call someone, they show up, they do work, there's nothing in writing, there's still legally a contract there and you still owe them the money. The question is, if you haven't figured out and there's no writing about how much, when they were supposed to start, when they were supposed to finish, all of those issues then become a potential for a dispute. That's why having something in writing is better than not having anything in writing.
This episode is brought to you by the Miami Construction Forum. This invitation-only group of construction professionals of all sizes and trades meets monthly for an informal lunch-and-learn session on current topics of interest, from getting paid and safety to bonding and insurance. To see the upcoming topics and request your invitation, visit MiamiConstructionForum.com.
So the first thing you need to do is you need to look at what your contract actually says. Because understand, none of any of this matters until there's a dispute. And then that's when everyone digs out the contract and they say, well, you didn't do what you're supposed to do per the contract. So you should at least have an understanding of what the agreement says. All things being equal, if it's a contract that's probably longer than a couple of pages, it says something like the following. You can't do any work without a signed change order in advance. It then may also say that if we have a disagreement or you refuse to do the work, I can order you to do the work and then you're gonna keep segregated records for labor and materials. So what I would suggest is, you don't want to formalize, you don't want to be too formal. You have a good working relationship with these folks. No sense rocking the boat. But you should make sure that you have something in writing, even via email, that they've authorized you to do this changed work. Keep in mind, that's usually the crux of the problem if there is a dispute, is their argument that, no, this isn't a change. It was right in your scope. Right. And you say, no, it wasn't in my scope. So if you can get them to confirm either them via email to you or you back to them, just that this is a change and that you will price and proceed, that's better. Those types of comments in an email is better. Then the second half of it is make sure that you keep, in fact, segregated labor and material costs. So if you have your guys doing work on the job and part of their work is the base contract work, and then for 3 hours they went over and they did the changed work that's kind of up in the air, you need to be able to segregate that in your records. You can't have their timesheet that just says 8 hours job site. But understand that if someone comes back to you and says, you said that this was 82 labor hours, are you going to be able to show them the actual labor hours for this guy and this guy and this guy, separate and apart from the base contract work? That's the crux of the problem.
Yeah, that's
right. Because you've coded it afterwards,
right.
But you don't. All you have for the guy himself is that he worked 8 hours on the job.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is, and by the way, there's a distinction between his payroll record, which is going to say 8 hours. That's fine. But he then needs to create a ticket for 3.5 hours on this day.
Correct.
He did this work.
Thanks for listening to the LeanZone.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or in your favorite podcast app. For articles, videos, and forums on this and other construction topics, head over to the LeanZone.com.